welcome to Crit Club, the podcast where four friends watch movies from the Criterion Channel streaming service that none of them have seen before and then discuss them to their heart's content. This week, I'm your host, Corey, and with me, as always, are Peter.
Hey, it's me, Peter.
Angela.
Oh, hi.
And Wizard.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, and so this week we dive into the mud, muck, and blood of Come and See, the 1985 film by Elam Klimov, which portrays the cruel existence of living in the Nazi-occupied Belarus in 1943. We follow the protagonist, Flora, as he changes from bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and eager recruit to a weathered and shell-shocked young man that he becomes. The film took nearly 8 years for Klimov to get approved by the Soviet government. The only real change ended up being that they changed the name, which I think is personally improvement. We can talk about that later. At the end of the day, they didn't censor the film. And what we're left with is a very graphic and at times quasi-surreal experience that, upon its original release, resulted in reportedly at least some early viewers needing medical attention after they left the theater. While the film didn't make a lot at the box office at the time, it still remains highly regarded. At the time, it did win the Golden Prize at the Moscow International Film Festival, and its 2017 restoration won the Best Restored Film at the Venice International Film Festival. It did receive a Criterion release. It is number 1035. I actually don't remember why I picked this movie. It was one my on
it's
the watch
Corey
list
pick.
For a while.
It's a Corey
Do
pick.
It? Corey
it's
pick,
a
yeah.
Corey pick.
It's a Corey pick.
Yeah. I probably originally found it being discussed on Reddit or something like that, because it does pop up fairly often. And yeah, so I have a lot to say about this movie, I think. But first, I'm going to turn it over to my co-host. So, fellow Crit Clubbers, did this movie have you dancing the Charleston on a suitcase? Or did it leave you wanting to repeatedly shoot a photo of it in a mud puddle? Peter. I'll start with you. Yeah, I had a really hard time writing something like that for this
option?
One. I almost didn't, but...
Let's, yeah, it's hard to write a jovial, yeah. a light question around this. What do you say about this? I think this is one of the best war movies or movies about war I've ever seen. And I think because it had like a mishmash of a bunch of things, some of which we've seen and some of which I've just seen before. Like, I felt a lot of Pishoch in this, speaking of another Corey pick.
Oh, my God, I thought about Pishoch so much.
I thought a lot about that. And I guess in, like, the stark honesty and, like, the leaning in of reality of what, or sort of what it was trying to do, or at least seemed like it was trying to do reality. I thought a lot about Tarkovsky, which in one of our last episodes, we watched Solaris, and also like Stalker. There's just a lot of like open space that I'm not talking about necessarily mm-hmm. fields, but just like panning around of areas and scenes and open space to really sort of sink in. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm not making a joke when I say this. I also thought about Black Moon. Not making a joke. Like, yeah, there's something about, because I think just about the surrealness of this movie, because this is one of those that, like, made me sort of think about what is surrealness in general, and isn't it own, in some ways, or do I think of it as a uncanny valley of humanity and the world itself as something, or people acting in ways, or the world acting in ways that are off or awkward or unsettling or uncanny. And isn't it the most horrific thing when those are actually true things that are happening that are so surreal, you know? I guess all that considered, like I thought this was also just stunningly shot. Mm-hmm. Like the direction and the cinematography, the compositions of the scenes, like the attention to detail of the production effects, I guess for lack of a better word, was jaw dropping and just truly beautiful. Like, this is one of those movies that was like, you could tell it was delayed for as long because and just gave this guy more and more time to think about what were the images, what were the depictions, how this movie was to be seen. And it was effective for me from start to finish. Like, you know, I think I'm not sure if I've ever seen about the Belarusian side of World War II or had a depiction shown to me, even though this is very similar to other depictions of that I've seen and read throughout World War II. But I still, that doesn't take away or detract from the images that were shown and how they were shown. Because I think I went into this prepared for this to be gratuitous and antagonistic.
Same.
In a way that I would say Pashoch could be at times. But I did not find this about Come and See personally. I did not find this to be gratuitous or antagonistic. This felt really like, to me, an attempt at honesty above everything else in every way, and not necessarily trying to ascribe judgment exactly on it. I don't know. I can think more about it. But those are largely my thoughts. I really honestly think this was kind of a masterpiece. Like, this was just kind of one of the best movies of war I've ever seen, and will be a movie I think about for a very long time. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, when we get to me, I think I have a lot of the similar reactions. Wizard, you want to go next?
Is it Wizard's turn? Guys, war is bad. Mm-hmm. This movie is not, and that's awesome. Great. This is a great movie. It is a hard watch. It is a hard watch. Although I was surprised. I was surprised that it wasn't as like graphic or as intense, I guess, as I was expecting. This is an extremely intense film. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting something too depressing for the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I got, but like less than I was expecting, if that makes sense. It's a real masterpiece of filmmaking. I really enjoyed like the surreality of it. I really, really enjoyed the sort of like muted horror of the entire movie. Mm-hmm. This is a movie that really goes out of its way to show us like the banality of war and violence and this is a movie where we're all in the shit, you know? I think the ending of the film kind of best exemplifies that, where we see these Russian partisans capture this Einsatzgruppe who've just liquidated a Belarusian village. And I remember watching the movie and being like, well, I don't feel very good about this either. Like, straight up, Crit Club is 100% a fuck Nazis podcast. But yep. There's no, you know, the whole time I'm watching like this last scene, one of these last scenes, I'm like, well, this isn't any better. This is terrible. This is all awful. Everything is awful. This whole situation is awful. This war is awful. And there are no good guys, no bad guys, and especially no winners. And I think this movie captures all of that really, really well. I think it is maybe so relentlessly grim. I got to tell you guys, there were a couple of times where I laughed during the movie.
No. There's comedy in this movie.
I laughed. I laughed when they have their like hysterical, like the close-up laughter scene where they kind of like oscillate between like just like horror and joy. I found like the movie to be so relentlessly grim that like when they're charging through the bog and it's just this extended awful scene of these
Artreyu.
Two, yeah, like
Artax. Sorry.
Oh man, but I'm watching them like flounder in this bog, and I'm like, I am sorry, guys. This is so grim that I guess I have to break the tension with some laughter, because this is just like peak awfulness. Yeah, the war scenes are incredible. Like, the special effects are incredible. It's a hard watch. It's really hard, and I definitely sat with the movie for a while afterwards, just kind of feeling terrible. But at the same time, like, the movie is an achievement in anti-war filmmaking. It is an achievement in portraying war as I think we need to look at war generally. You know, there are a lot of great war movies out there that fall into the trap of good guys and bad guys and neat endings and victory for the people that deserve it. And this is one of those movies that really reminds us that there are no winners in war, and the best way to win is not to play, to quote another great film about war. Yeah, I am looking forward to seeing what everyone thought about it, and I hope, it's a great movie. It was really powerful. It was really moving and really awful and really well done. So come and see.
Come and see. Angela, you want to tell us your experience with the film?
So this is an amazing film. This will probably, I don't want to ruin our, you know, this is not a bad film. However, I am not in any way, shape, or form in a capacity to be able to watch it and talk about it. This will be me talking about the film for the rest of the show. So, yeah, I can't even talk about it right now. So, I have two boys the same age as this kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen after the election. I don't think anyone's taking the election seriously. And I think there's a very good possibility that we'll end up with a fascist as a president. And that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. So this is too real. It's done way too well. It is too real, too terrifying. So that is all I'm going to say for this entire show. And I really don't even want to talk about what's in this movie because it's too real for me. So, you know, and I'm not mad at anyone for choosing this film. It's a great film. Like, more people should watch it. I would say if this was in the 1990s, if this was pre-2005, I could have, maybe pre-2016, I could have watched this film. But after everything that this country has been through since 2016, this hits too far close to home for me. And maybe I'm too sensitive, maybe I'm too pessimistic about our country's future, or just how decrepit our own infrastructure is and how far more alive our anger is towards each other. But, you know, this film is far too frightening. It is a horror movie, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm going to let you guys talk about it, and then I will come back around for rolling later. So enjoy.
Sure. And that's all totally valid. And
yeah,
totally. And I agree with you.
Yeah, no, and I'm not mad at anybody. Like, and I'm glad you guys were able to find more life in it and be able to talk about it. I mean, of note, I'm the only one here who has children. So,
true.
You know, it just is terrifying, you know, watching that mother in the beginning of the movie. I'm like, you know, that could have been me easily. So
I had that scene playing and Frida was in the other room and she couldn't even understand the language, obviously, but she had to go out for a walk because that woman's yelling was just so visceral and real to her.
Yeah. Yeah. So enjoy. I'm going to go off and they're going to text me when it's ready. I'm going to keep, just for Peter's notes, I'm going to keep this rolling so that you don't have any sound issues. But enjoy the show, everybody.
You're in for a treat, folks. Three guys are going to talk about World War II.
Podcasting first. Thanks, Angela.
Corey, what did you think about it?
This is one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Wow. Pretty easy. And I agree with a lot of what you two have said. I think that I was expecting a lot more gratuity in the sort of portrayal of war and, you know, blood and guts and gore and all that stuff. And while that is present here, that's not what this movie was. And so I think that I was really surprised initially at the beginning at the tone of the movie, where like one of my first notes here is like, oh, this movie is funny. It made me think of like Jean-Pierre Jeunet. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly or not, but the Amelie guy in City of Lost Children, and particularly like a very long engagement where just a lot of that, I wouldn't be surprised if he'd seen this movie and had drawn inspiration from it, because I think a lot of the surrealism that you see in this movie is surrealism type stuff that, you know, especially in the way it comes to directing and those, you know, just long shots and close-ups of people's faces and all that stuff. And like, I think in the intro, I called it quasi-surreal because nothing that happens in this movie couldn't really not be happening. I mean, everything that happens, it's not like there's a fantastical element here or whatever. They're strange. It's portrayed in this strange, surreal way, but it's nothing that's like not, you know, realistic. And I think that that's what just makes the whole thing just so off-putting. And, yeah, like early on when they're talking about when the two guys come to the house and they're going to take the kid away, and there's like, oh, we only drink on holidays. And the guy just has his face in the mask. He's like, and that wakes, because he's like trying to make the kids laugh and like trying to make the little twins laugh. And so he's like twisting his nose. And I'm just like, there's such a and it keeps this unsettling tone throughout the whole thing in just a way that is like so effective, where it's like it will give you these senses of levity where they're like laying in the muck, cracking a joke about, you know, the bottle that fell out of the air or whatever, but like they're there because they thought they were about to die from a bomb. And it's just like, man, I don't know, I was really just blown away by it. It feels like every inch of this movie is crawling with cleverness and creativity and attention, and there's something just unique about every scene that's in here that just seems, everything seems so well considered. And I didn't mention, but Klimov, this was his last film. He stopped making films because he was like, I did everything I wanted to in a film, basically, with this one.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, you know, and I was thinking about this too, about like, you know, because a lot of the effects and special effects were like practical, and they were like using real ammunition, and like bullets were actually whizzing over this kid's head, especially during like the cow scene and stuff. And I'm like, why do I keep picking these movies where kids are in danger? Like Pachoche and In the Realm of the Senses and this movie. And I mean, you could even say the Hearts and Minds movie as well, I guess. So this is not intentional on my part. But yeah, I don't know when I'm going to watch this movie again, because it's not an easy watch. But I definitely want to watch this movie again, because there's just so much in it, and it's just so strikingly well done. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I this is like, maybe the emotional overload was quick to get me, and I took a safe step back from it. Because when I think about this, like, I think about this as a movie I want to like study, you know, because I agree with you in that every scene was just, you said it great, was so well considered. I'd love to ask also what you said, Corey, about the opening, the beginning. I'd love to ask what you all made of that very beginning. That threw me for a loop in that way of like that sort of quasi surrealness of like, where am I? You know, I like, as in, I'm on Earth or whatever, but like this kid talking in that voice and then carrying the bone around in his mouth, like there was just some like,
and picking up the phone and being like, hello, Berlin. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's from like
some like real brilliance about sort of opening this story in this very, I don't even know how to say it in this
way. It's unnerving.
It's a great word for it.
And creepy. Like, this child is doing this weird, like, raspy, scary voice. And, like, for the first little bit, it's all sort of folks talking to the camera, right? These, like, sort of slow takes where we are kind of submerged into this situation. We are kind of submerged into Belarus in 1943, and we don't really join Flora until, you know, like what, like maybe 5 minutes into the movie. Like, we don't really establish, here are our characters, here's what's happening. Yeah, it was very strange at first. It did remind me of, especially the, like, just kind of where they are. I just kind of where the movie opens. It did remind me a lot of Stalker. Or like those, you know, that's like slow moving, like Tarkovsky films where like we're just kind of panning over this like sandy, like blasted area. And
I felt a lot of Tarkovsky throughout this whole movie. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, it's wild. It's a wild start, and it just kind of goes from there.
I think the old man, like I think the first lines of the movie are something along the lines of he's yelling at things like, "What are you crazy? Are you playing a game or whatever?" And like it just sort of sets it up of like both like war being just like this big stupid game, because you even see it later, like when you see this almost like frat boy, like, you know, boys club of Germans, you know, burning down this village or whatever. But like, you know, where they're basically just like playing like it's a game and making war seem like a game. But it also kind of shows just even the naivete of the kids, you know, throughout all this, you know, the entering into this movie, you know, especially Flora, who enters this movie and enters the whole conflict with a bunch of, you know, naivete. So I think that like having that be like the first line of the movie, like really just sets the good tone for where we are and all that. And then he gets the, I don't know. There's just a beautiful shot of like, because normally I hate credits, you know? And so they play the credits over him like limping towards the camera with his friend on the beach. And they're like, oh, he's limping now. Did he get it hurt or whatever? And then like at the very end of the credits, after they all roll for that long sequence, then you just see like he has the gun down his pants and they're like laughing and cracking up about it or whatever. And I'm like, those were... I love watching these credits now. Like that was just such a good payoff.
We did it.
They really did it. So I don't know. The whole opening thing was just amazing. And then just like so much then happens and we can get later. But then we also get the like recurring image of the plane flying over at that opening image. And then so much happens in this movie that you sort of forget about how it even opens, but then it all sort of comes back like at the middle of the movie when they find that old man again. And it's just like this horrific turn, like even more horrific turn when they find him burned and all that stuff. And he basically blames the kid for starting this whole conflict for digging up the guns. And it's like gut wrenching. And it's like, man, like just as far as like script construction goes, this movie is just like fantastic. I don't even have to talk about how, you know, just well shot and everything it is too.
It's such a simple, terrible beginning to a movie about conflict. We start with like two kids playing in the dirt and one of them is like, I'm gonna dig up, like, I know there's some like old rifles like buried. It's like I'm not sure if it's like an abandoned weapons cache or like if they're like looting like a grave or something like that. But yeah, I really it's just such like a simple beginning. Boy finds a rifle and now he's like, all right, I'm set to go to war. This is gonna be great. He's got his dad's old suit and
is just showing how he's not a fully grown man. You know, he's just a little kid in big man's clothes and stuff. Like, bro, the thing that
the suit and especially the scene where they're doing this like group shot of the partisan like column, you know,
in the forest.
The thing that I really loved about that scene is how you look and no one is wearing a uniform. Like this is the side of war that we don't see a lot, or because, as you know, by virtue of like living in North America and like our perception of World War II as having these like very well-defined sides of uniformed officers and soldiers who stand out and are distinctive and do soldiery things. This movie is about defending your home. This is about boys with guns and like old men with like moth-eaten uniforms like doing their part. And there's something so fucking awful about all of that. You know, there's just something so awful. Like, war is awful. This whole conflict is awful. But there's something just so truly terrible about this picture of all these mostly boys who have no training, who have no anything, and it's just like, all right, guys, go get them.
Yep.
Do your best.
But I mean, even in the scene, they have like the cow with the "eat me before the Germans do" on it, and they save the chair that's like set up to break to the sergeant, so he falls over and stuff. And it's like, if the movie didn't have this tone in it, it would be a completely different movie. You know, it would be even more difficult to watch. But I think it would also like. It's moments like that that make the movie, at least for me, where like watchable, where it's like, oh, I want to keep going and see where this is going, because it's not like it is grim. And, you know, he said it was grim, but like there are these moments of levity in it that also it's like we are still humans in this, and we're still going to like play pranks on each other, and we're still going to like try to find times to laugh and all this that like, yeah, if that stuff wasn't also in the movie, I think it would be much less effective.
Well, but it also had me thinking just about, because I've never been really a fan of war movies as a, like, sure. In general, like, yeah. You know, but this made me even kind of side even more with that because of what you were saying, Wizard, of just the sort of, you know, romanticism, but also thinking that there are these clear moments of setting it with, you know, I think of Saving Private Ryan, of storming of Normandy Beach and all of this stuff. And I think, this movie's about the burning of villages and, you know, rural Belarus, like this, or Belarus, yeah. Like this is like, you know, this is the vast majority, 98% of war is exactly like this.
And it's exactly this, yeah.
Yes, like, exactly. And I feel like
grand operations don't exist.
Yes, exactly.
Wandering.
Yes, and, you know, taking, finding new boots when the officers need the youngest soldier's boots for it, climbing through. Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
It's a really zoomed in story. Like it's really zoomed in to Flora, to his experience. You know, there are talks of the other sort of larger machinations that are going on in the war or whatever. But I mean, for the most part, yeah, it's these small little mundane things that I don't think anyone would really think of until it's happening to them.
Man, but then I, because I'm with you, Corey. It wasn't necessarily the humor that kind of. Well, I mean, honestly, I was propelled all the way from the start. That start got me, and I was hooked, and I was really fascinated by the tone it was just carrying through. And then, like, the meeting of Glasha, of the girl and the thing is just, that is, I mean, also Black Moon, like, but just in a real, but also felt very true of this very bizarre, like, two people not knowing each other and the circumstances around them and not knowing how to interact or how to take that interaction or how to carry that interaction forward, just complete and total, I mean, the trauma, right? I mean, it's just it's just everything walled and pinned in and prisoned in this trauma and humans trying to find some sort of sense of, I don't know, not even connection, but just interaction with other people. I thought that whole thing was honestly terrifying. Like, because I think, like, the first sort of interaction and meeting with Glasha, because of the ways that she changed and that her suspicions and fears and levity sort of like commingled. And, you know, I felt the way, I guess, Flora was feeling, of just feeling like I didn't know how to keep up because I didn't know what was going on with her or her mind. And I thought, yeah, that just an incredible pair that I did hope that they would stick together longer, but this is an odyssey, right? This is a whole journey of a story.
Odyssey is the right word. It really is. Because it's like we're like almost an hour into the film before, you know, the war starts in earnest. It's about an hour into the film when the bombs drop, and I thought that scene, I obviously, again, special effects.
Yeah, he was so close to where those were.
Literally, they're literally just blowing shit up.
But they really were.
I was keeping track because I was like, oh, those are far enough away that would get by in American standards. But they kept coming. Those explosions kept coming closer and closer to him.
Yeah. And that sound design, like we're like Raiden in his head when the bombs start going off, and just this like muted. We've seen that device used in other films, like Saving Private Ryan uses it. Other war films use that kind of like chaos of battle, like ringing in your ears kind of thing, but still manages to like romanticize it or make it like action packed and exciting. And where this movie really succeeds is, you know, it really drives home how vulnerable all of these characters are. Yeah. But Flora especially, but like everyone here is vulnerable to this eye in the sky that we see periodically, this reconnaissance plane that's like just doing laps around the region and being like, oh yeah, there's a column of partisans, there's some kids digging up some rifles or something. Mm-hmm.
I love that parachuter getting stuck in the tree and fumbling. I don't know why that struck me as so true and honest. Mm-hmm. It just felt, I don't know.
Yeah. And after like the bombs and stuff too, I legit thought that the character was going to be deaf throughout the movie. And I was kind of like even then wondering if he was or not. And then there's a scene where Glasha like mentions it, that he is deaf or whatever. I mean, he obviously isn't completely deaf, but like, at that scene, I was like, is this gonna be about a deaf main character now? Because I mean, I don't know. Oi.
The sound design was so striking in this film. Like, it's just like this violent assault on the viewer, like so often, like wailing and screaming. Like the boys, Flora's mother at the beginning of the film is like screaming and wailing at him, and there's that just continues throughout the film, like so much. Like when they find the refugees from Flora's village, just before they find the village elder who's been like doused in gasoline and lit on fire, this like chorus of like old women like wailing really mm-hmm. got to me, just really like unnerved mm-hmm. me. And the movie has this like surreality to it that really like feeds into those moments where you're just kind of, there were multiple times during the film where I kind of had to like hit pause and take a step back and be like, okay, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. This is a lot. And like I never felt like the movie was too much, except where again it's relentlessly grim that you kind of have to break the tension with a little chuckle. But yeah, man, like the sound design in this mm-hmm. film, like the attack on the viewer, really.
Wait, but also
really
the music.
Effective.
I also really enjoyed the music.
Yeah,
whenever it came up, I thought it was, I don't know, just perfect.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I'm trying
perfect.
To find the name of the composer. They
Oleg Yushchenko.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and like, the opening song or whatever, that's the opening music that's playing is just like this boom with like this little steady drum beat and stuff. And it's just like that kind of soundscape, I guess, follows us throughout the whole movie.
Esoteric and haunting, real, just dread blanket over top of everything.
But yeah, it does what you were talking about a number of times, Wizard, where it's just this cacophonous screaming and yelling that like, yeah, I think if I would have paused it would have broken the spell. But like when I was watching it, I was captivated. I mean, it was doing its job on me, certainly.
So I wanted to, so one thing I wanted to mention, I really thought it was fascinating and I really enjoyed the scene when it's Flora and I guess he calls him his uncle, when they go to the farmer and like steal the cow, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I thought it was really interesting that was shot from the first person perspective of like the uncle of like pointing the gun and having that, like, because I think to my mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, that was the only sort of scene where that was shot like that. But I felt like it was exceptionally effective in the way of, you know, putting the viewer in that place, right? Of just really like no escape, being party abetting, you know, this action. And again, I think that's such a tactical choice, because I think we're agreeing that it's, at least the three of us didn't find it to be overwhelmingly gratuitous in what it was showing. And I think there are so many different ways or so many different times when the direction of this movie could have been, all right, now that's the first person shot and we're really going to fuck people up with that, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas this felt very human in its, you know, need for survival, even though it, you know, may not be a moral thing to sort of act with. But I was really fascinated by that choice to shoot that in first person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh my God, those, because I was really taken with just the effects of it, of like whenever the shooting is coming across and you know the uncle dies and the cow dies, like that was just
rounds
some
like lighting up the night, like holy yeah shit. Man,
that was wild. Like I just, everything about this movie felt
it is wild because I think they were real bullets.
That was insane.
Yeah, it's really insane.
Yeah,
god,
so much emphasis on like the vulnerability of of Flora, but again of these untrained fucking peasants who like there's like one guy, like the there's like one guy in this whole column that is maybe a soldier, and here I'm talking about he's the extremely grim looking dude in a trench coat. He seems to be the only like professional soldier in the whole business, but like just so much work went into communicating how like outmatched, outgunned, and untrained these folks are. Like when you actually see like German soldiers, like not like the Einsatz, like thugs, when you see like these German paratroopers like making their way across the field in these like professional lines, like complete confidence, like just kind of like moving through Soviet territory, or like this is like, there's such a strong contrast between these like quiet, efficient soldiers and then the Russian paramilitaries, and then also these German like SS like Einsatz and SS officers, like so much effort was put into making these three groups feel like distinctive, I guess, and communicate sort of the value, I guess, of training and preparedness. I don't know, you know,
and lemurs.
Yeah,
was that a lemur?
Well, I think before we get to the village scene, I was just...
Are we there already?
I don't know. No, I mean, we can go wherever you want to go.
Well, I was just going to say, like, the Nazi, the Hitler effigy that they make, it just almost kind of shows
I'm so glad
that
we're talking about that. The effort into this Hitler effigy.
And it was making me think of like, I mean, this is basically me like, you know, posting a meme, an anti-war meme or something like that on like social media. It's like, this is not going to do anything. You know?
Got him.
I'm so ill-equipped to actually make any change in the world. And yet here they are making, you know, deciding if they want to put ears or not on this, you know, Hitler effigy and stuff.
Give him a wart. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great effigy, I got to say.
It was. Yeah. I've not made a better one personally.
Not recently.
Let's talk lemur.
Yeah,
I loved that touch. I thought that was
that weird.
They don't need to do that. There was nothing that, you know, that's not called for. That was one of those things that felt out of place, but entirely believable.
Totally.
So surreal. Like, yeah, like such an odd, like character, like feature. Like such an odd little detail to include that, oh, like the SS commandant, where do you get a fucking lemur in Belarus? Like,
yeah it makes him it makes him feel like almost like a Bond villain or whatever.
Yeah.
But then once he's stripped of that, you know, he just becomes this like cowering asshole under a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we see him. One of the points is to make this, give this war criminal like a moment of tenderness where he's like feeding this pet, and he's a man who has a pet, and it's an unusual pet, and it tells us something about this guy without having to do any heavy lifting, right? Like just he's a
saving
Nazi
the cat.
With a lemur. What's going on?
Of course, I brought that up to avoid talking about the barn scene.
Sure.
Because goddamn,
the last
well,
last
and I think
hour
even before the barn scene, though, there's this like ruse, you know, that the Germans, you know, sort of play on everyone. It's like, okay, everyone, gather your stuff, gather all your documents and all that stuff. And I found myself like wondering when I'm watching this, I'm like, do they actually think they're gonna like? Do the Germans actually think they're going to be able to like organize all these like documents and stuff like that? Like I found myself just getting confused at like the orders and all that stuff. And it's like, and then like you see this just, there's so many just damn good shots in this movie where it's like this German soldier basically pretending to take documents like on top of this rickety crate or whatever. And like, you know, just stamping stuff or whatever. And then you find out like later when they're just like, they dump an empty briefcase, like, oh, you bureaucrats, you're doing a great job, like, with, you know, getting everyone's documentation and stuff. And it's just, like, it makes the whole thing just, like, I don't know, you just go on this ride of, like, confusion and then, like, incredulity and then, like, is this how they're actually doing it? It's like, oh, my God, they just, like, got me. It's like, yeah, of course they weren't actually going to be doing any of this, and this is all just to basically pacify them enough to be able to, like, cram them all into a barn and stuff. And I was just like, God damn, this movie took me on a friggin' ride here. Like,
this is that banality of evil stuff that Hannah Arendt is talking about, right? Where like, if you just pretend that everything is going exactly according to plan and like these institutions still matter, like your ID cards still matter, whatever, you're like, none of this shit matters because they when they rolled through, they had already decided what they were going to do, right? Like, but how do, like, and we see this throughout the history of World War II and the Holocaust, just leaning into the bureaucracy of it all and like overwhelming people with we'll get your papers, we'll get you sorted out, don't worry, we'll get everything sorted out.
Yeah.
And just the horror of that.
Well, I mean, so I don't think no one here is still because I mentioned it whenever I saw it, but Zone of Interest, you all haven't seen Zone of Interest yet.
No.
Because that's my first half of 2024 has been really Nazi heavy, Nazi media heavy.
I
read that Eichmann in Jerusalem as well. Mm-hmm. But like, I think Zone of Interest is such a fascinating companion to this movie, right? Of that being a total, you know, the strict order that was kept right next to so much of the chaos and destruction around it, and with this one just being like the sloppy reality of so many places. But also thinking about, I thought obviously a lot of Zone of Interest, but also Eichmann in Jerusalem reading this, because this felt like, I guess, Eichmann in Jerusalem was such an incredible book, and it had me thinking about the war and the Nazi regime in ways that I never did or never considered. And, you know, just thinking about the, you know, clearing out all of these countrysides to make room for the Third Reich, you know, and just finding reasons to do that, you know. And it's exactly what you're talking about, Wizard, of like, yeah, you know, it's gonna be fine. They're just making room for the Third Reich and clearing away, you know, whatever doesn't build up the Third Reich in their minds for the next 1,000 years. Uh-huh. And I thought that this was just an incredible companion to sort of, I don't know, both Zone of Interest and Eichmann in Jerusalem.
I had Zone of Interest downloaded for my recent flight, and I ended up watching The Office instead. So,
oh yeah,
hey, there you go. Take a break. Treat yourself.
No, Zone of Interest is, I think it's excellent. I think it's an excellent movie.
The last hour of this movie is an extended liquidation scene. It is one of the most powerful pieces of filmmaking I've seen in such a long time. It really like rattled me. Just in the sort of, you can't look away, like you must engage with this. Mm-hmm. I was reading a little bit about the director and his attitude toward this film, and people saying like, nobody's going to watch this thing. And his sort of response being, fine, like, if nobody watches it, nobody watches it. Like, what matters is this shit really happened. Like, this shit happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's incredible. Like, his attitude is sort of like, it is my job as a filmmaker to make this piece of art that will stand as proof that this shit happened. I believe the screenwriter was involved in the fighting in Belarus, and then it's also based on a novel about the liquidation of villages in Belarus or Belarus.
It says, like, on Wikipedia, I'm seeing it's like the co-screenwriter. The co-screenwriter fought with those partisans as a teenager Belarus.
And Klimov also had to run from various, you know, war activities and stuff too. I mean, he had to flee from all this.
Yeah.
And this was like, so after I finished watching this movie, and we're not done discussing it, but like after I finished watching it, I was just kind of like examining my own feeling of just feeling stunned after this. And I'm like, I mean, God willing, no, not that I believe in God, but like just, you know, just a phrase, like I can never make anything like this. Like this thing that I just watched is so far removed from any reality that I've luckily been able to sort of like live and exist. And as much, you know, as I feel like my own life pains me or whatever, like I will never be able to like create anything like this because of just the sheer visceralness of having to, you know, live through this in order to create such a sort of, you know, piece of art that, you know, portrays it in this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Wow. And it's all for naught because, you know, after the Einsatz and the SS liquidate the village, they get liquidated. Big loss.
I just like, you know, this goes on. This whole scene goes on for so long, but there's like so much going on in it. And
oh man, it's such like a
it's dense, and like I don't know. I just particularly remember.
Word, yeah.
I remember like the scene of like this woman just being dragged by her hair.
Yeah.
And then the guy like who's dragging her just like stops and gets a cigarette lit by his buddy. And then he just keeps on, then walks off and keeps on dragging her. I'm just like,
horrible.
How do you even? Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah.
Because there's also like the posing of the with a gun to Floria's head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they pose for a photo.
Jesus.
He's like, oh, I'm going to cock the pistol because it makes a better photo. You're like, man, fucking
we talked
hell.
About this with Pishoach, but like this poor actor, mm-hmm. like there's just no way that this didn't.
No, he apparently like, so they shot this movie chronologically, which is not a thing that most people do. And the actor apparently had just like, was exhausted, lost a ton of weight, went through this like incredibly harrowing experience. And then he just like kind of had to go back to school.
Oh,
it's fascinating that the director mentioned bringing in a hypnotist because he's like, I'm trying to, for one, the lead actor who's Alexei Kravchenko was not a professional actor or an experienced actor. They found like this unknown kid to take on this role, and Klimov he brings in this hypnotist because he's like, we need to tap into things. Like, we don't want to damage this kid in the process of making this movie.
Right.
So they brought in like a hypnotist to like, I don't know what exactly, put up like psychic walls or some nonsense or like, I can't even imagine, but like, yeah, like, this poor kid looks like shit by the end of the movie. Mm-hmm.
That's the bit that seems like the bit of one true fantastical surrealism, right? Of the old makeup, the like elderly makeup that's sort of applied to his face.
They like dye
that.
His hair white, or they like sort of lighten his hair, like things like that.
And but there's like wrinkles that are obvious, like makeup for that really seems like exaggeration that they're really trying to ram home that point and not make that realistic.
Another
just like little touch that I was just in awe of is he leaves the village and then he finds the German woman who had previously just been sitting there like, you know, munching on her lunch of crawfish or whatever, like had a car wreck or whatever, and he grabs the bandages and then he goes and takes his bandages to fix his gun that his had previously
the broken stock of his rifle.
Like, man, this friggin' movie, man.
There's that shot of the old woman in the bed.
And then not long after that is when we see what happened to Grasha, which we don't really even have to talk about.
I don't think that's her. She looks like her, but it's not her.
Yeah.
We completely lose track of Grasha. I think she stays back with the refugees.
Yeah.
But she is supposed to look like her.
Yeah.
But she's
how did you
she's
how could you tell
escapes,
that it wasn't her?
Because she escapes the she escape she's one of the peasants who escapes the barn.
I think it's the girl who was being pulled by her hair.
Yeah. Oh. But that's not Grasha. Like
I thought that was her.
That actress also deserves all the awards because she had to put up with a lot of shit to make this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad for these like very big, I don't feel bad. I feel bad, I'll tell you, these big set piece things, this whole like last hour of the film is this like hugely constructed scene, this like carefully orchestrated scene where lots of things are happening all at once. And every time something like that happens in a movie, I always think of playtime, which is weird mm-hmm. and inappropriate.
No, yeah.
But I think I always go to these scenes where it's like, it is like controlled chaos everywhere.
Yeah.
And like, it must have been such a challenge to get everybody to make this scene interesting, because there's just so much going on. There's looting and burning. There's just, it's
like
just
people driving,
so,
driving motor vehicles around that could easily run over
someone. There's
people
fucking around.
Yeah.
It was so crazy. Yeah.
And there's so many extras. There's so many extras in this movie. Like, and everyone just does a great job. Like,
incredible movie.
Whoa.
So we end up with the Nazis under a bridge. They give the whole "I was just following orders" routine.
Fuck you.
Yeah. And then I don't know. I love how Flora just goes up and he's the one to like, here's the gas. Like,
Interesting. Yeah, that scene was interesting. That was one of those moments where I'm like, oh boy, it's gonna get bad. And
it almost seems like they might be like, the crowd might be turning in their favor or whatever. Like, they might, but then like Flora just kind of cements it. It's like, no, fuck these guys. They're gonna burn.
But then they all get shot. They're like, fuck this. Let's shoot them. Like,
yeah.
This, like, I and maybe that's what I'm thinking about the whole of it, because I think the whole of this movie subverts expectations, but somehow in a realistic way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I've been trying to say all along with the, like, that quasi-surrealness of, like, nothing happens that I think is going to happen exactly, but everything that happens makes a ton of sense and feels very real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, speaking of one of the most unrealistic parts of the movie, what did we think about the ending?
Such a interesting way to end this movie
with this
like just like Hail Mary surreal. So, well, Corey, you wanna kind of run us through the ending?
I mean,
spin it up.
He starts shooting repeatedly at this picture of Hitler in the mud and
Hitler the Liberator.
Yeah, the Liberator, and then we get this like long protracted series of real footage shot backwards, where things are like, I guess, reversing back through time and stuff. My initial reaction to this is, I don't like tone break endings. I don't like it when endings are so extremely different from the original rest. I mean, it made me think of In the Realm of the Senses, where all of a sudden the announcer just comes on being like, this is a real thing that really happened or whatever. It's like,
we've seen a few times.
Yeah, I'm in the movie here, like I'm with you here. And then when you start actually like showing the real footage, like I started to feel myself getting taken out of it, and it's a long sequence. It goes on for a while, and at a certain point in it, I'm thinking, like, we've been following mostly the POV of Flora and like following him through this as a sort of naive kid, and like I don't even think that he would even necessarily know all of the context of the larger war. Like he would have a basic understanding of it, obviously, but like a lot of this footage is stuff that I don't think he would have known about or would have, be aware of as part of his, thing. And it's like, and it's not, I think a lot of the movie too, like Hitler isn't a character in this movie. Like he is in some World War II movies. He is, we've never seen that as a person. It's always been like all these other doofy frat boy, fascist Nazi guys that are sort of the guys that are, doing all this stuff. And so I thought it was interesting, like, 'cause I'm watching this ending, I'm like, yes, this movie is about Hitler, but it hasn't really been about Hitler, but now it is about Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
But then kind of by the end of it, after it had all rewound and then they get to the sort of famous photo of Hitler as a baby. And then that's when he stops shooting, and starts crying. And then he goes off for this like long sequence of them just running through the woods. I was like, yeah, I get it. I get the emotion they were going for, where it's like this desire, this want, this like, I don't know. It made me think of like when I'm in a car crash, which I've been in a couple of car crashes in my life. And like you're in a car crash and before it's even over, you're like, can I please just take back these last 10 seconds of my life so that this thing doesn't actually happen? And obviously you can't. And so like, I understand, I thought this was kind of a feeling of like, can't we just go back in time? Can't we just erase all this stuff? Can't we please go back to a time where this didn't have to happen? But then he gets to a point and he's like, no, we can't. And we have to go fucking trudging through the woods and keep going with this war because we can't go back in time. That's how I interpreted the whole thing.
So you like connected with that ending.
I did. And I think that if it would have stopped at him stopping shooting and like crying or whatever, I would have had a different thing. But because it then showed them going off and tromping through the woods for another 2 minutes just to really drive home that like, no, we're not done. You can't go back in time.
Yeah.
We're still marching forward. Yeah. There's still a lot more war to go. That's when I was like, oh, okay, I'm on
yeah,
board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's interesting, Corey. Like, I think that's a great sort of read on the mm-hmm. ending. This idea that like, you know, would you go back in time and kill Hitler? It's like, oh yeah, totally. Well, would you kill baby Hitler? Because like we've seen a lot of babies get killed in this movie. A lot right. of children get killed in this movie. And this idea that like, well, if we could just whack this kid, would that stop all of this? And the movie, I think the movie is kind of ambiguous about that. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Historians of World War II, was World War II inevitable? Let us know. If Hitler was dead, would all this have happened? But I, you know, yeah, like there's something to this like final shot of Hitler and his mother, which is not a real picture. The two pictures right. are real, but it's a composite image,
mm-hmm.
Which makes it a deliberate choice on the part of the director to show a picture of Hitler with his mom. And, you know, I think my initial read was some kind of like shared humanity or something like that. But I don't think that's what this is about at all. I think, Corey, you're spot on. I think this is about like there is no fixing this. There is no point at which you can go back. You can kill this small child if you want. But like, you know, like we've sort of been saying for the whole movie, like there's no winning there. There's no winning in any of this. And yeah, all once you kind of get that hate and rage out of your system, there's still more war to fight and still more horror to endure.
I didn't connect as heavily with it. Well, see, it was, I guess it was kind of a miss for me, this attempt, but it didn't detract my appreciation. I didn't dislike it. I wasn't mm-hmm. left like, oh, don't love that. I just, mm-hmm. I felt like I understood the frustration shooting at this picture, at this image, at this symbol, and then the realization of this is a fruitless gesture, and at the end of the day, I'm going to have to start surviving still, you know?
Yeah.
But I just accepted that was the ending, and I was like, oh, yeah, hey, what are you going to do? But it didn't detract in any sort of way.
I mean, I totally could have gone with an ending where it was just him unloading, you know, an entire clip of the photo and just like, you know, some close-ups of a shot, the close-ups of the photo, and then like him just standing there out of clips and then having someone yell, hey, come on, let's go. Quit wasting bullets. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
I could have had that be the ending too. That would have been just as good to me.
Yeah.
Woof.
That's a good read though, Corey. I like the way you put that.
Yeah. I can, you know, taking the whole film together, I can see why the Soviet censors at the time were like, I don't know, man. Like
I'm honestly surprised this got made. I'm honestly very surprised this got made.
Yeah, for sure.
Like in Russia, in the old Soviet republics, they call this conflict the Great Patriotic War.
Yeah.
And this, you know, like that's way too flashy a title for like the reality that this movie I think portrays, and I think this is the reality of that conflict.
Mm-hmm. It is very
surprising.
I'm surprised
it got made. Yeah,
that the Soviet Union let this get made.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is that, you know, obviously the Russians come off looking better, I guess, which is, you know, it's not like it's anti-war in the sense that like it says like war is terrible and everybody and nobody wins here, and there are no good guys, which there it is like there are no good guys, and like I'm sure mm-hmm. Russian censors at the time were like, no, we were the good guys. So it is, it, you know, the movie really stands as like, as like, as
I would say the Nazis are the bad guys.
The Nazis are the bad guys. The Nazis are the bad guys. 100%. And continue to be. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I have much more to say.
Yeah. I don't think I do either.
I'm spent, guys.
Yeah. Boy. Yeah. It's quite a movie.
We got something. We got something fun coming up, right?
Yeah, I think so. we'll get to we're watching next week after we go through our rating. On Crit Club, we rate things from 1 to 20 as a nod to the 20-sided die of role playing games. And so, I guess I'll just go in the order in which I called people. I think I started with Peter. Peter, what would you rate Come and See?
Yeah, 19. Yeah, mm-hmm. Same as Pashoch. I think. Like I think there's a possibility I watch this again and I'm like, what the fuck was I thinking? This is a crit through and through. But I think right now where I'm left with, it's just a fucking masterpiece. This is just incredible. And I think this conversation left me with so much more to think about and leaves me to want to watch it again, which is crazy. But hey, I said it about Pashoch. Corey, thank you for bringing these horrors into my life. Like I
hope to continue to do so for many more years to come.
No, this was, I will think about this movie for a very long time, and I am so incredibly glad that I saw it. And 19 for me.
Very good. Wizard, how would you rate this?
See, that I wish I had Angela's ability to know a crit, like that qualification that it made me cry, is perfect, because then you always know the difference between a 19 and a 20, you know? And I'm in the same boat. I'm like, this was an incredible piece of filmmaking. It is relentlessly grim and challenging. It is heartbreaking and visceral and all of the things. And I cannot say enough positive stuff about the movie. But I think that a crit is reserved for something that really like resonates with the things that I find like amazing about film. And like, I'm not a war film guy at the end of the day. But as war films go, like this is a masterpiece. This is a 19 for sure.
Yeah, right on. Angela, would you like to rate?
I will rate. I will give it a 20.
You are muted on our side right now.
Oh yeah, but the recording thing. There it is. Yeah, I will rate and roll. I give it a 20. This gets a crit. Because given the subject matter, and when you find out that like nearly 700 Belarusian villages were decimated in this way. Mm-hmm. It's only fair to humanity that we have to endure watching a film like this. And I'm terrified that stuff like this is going to come up again. And it's happening now in Gaza. And it's why I can't really talk about it, because it's too real and it's all happening right now and we haven't learned anything. And that's heartbreaking for me as someone who has consciously brought children into the world, and I did so under the Obama administration because I did truly have hope, and I don't believe that it's real. So yeah, it gets a 20.
Yeah.
What about you, Corey? What are you rolling?
I mean, I think for me, if this isn't a crit, then I don't know what is. So yeah, this gets a 20 for me.
Wow.
And I think when we did our, what was it, 53rd episode spectacular?
51st
episode spectacular. I think I had said something along the lines of, like, I think I should really be a little bit more lenient with my crits. Like, it's a threshold that you pass.
Yep.
It's not, like, an absolute thing where you get to. And I think I should have given it to The Celebration. I give The Celebration 19, but I still find myself thinking about that movie. And I think if I go back and rewatch that, I'll probably give it a 20. Or I would have given it a 20, I guess. But yeah, for this, I'm like, if this isn't a crit for me, then I don't know what it is.
Listeners, you can look at all of the scores we have given to all of our movies in the handy spreadsheet in your show notes, and there you can see the last time Corey gave a crit was Sanjuro.
That was a long time ago.
Wow.
The last time Angela gave a crit was to The Blue Caftan, a beautiful little
movie. Oh, that was such a nice movie.
Yeah.
Very good.
Nice movie. So nice.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks, everyone, for sticking it out with us. I'm sorry, not to the end of the episode, to the end of that section. We do want to let you know that if you have thoughts on Come and See or any of our past picks or future picks or things you would like us to watch, please reach out to us. We're on various things at Crit Club Podcast. You can email us at critclubpodcast.com. We're on Instagram and Blue Sky at Crit Club Podcast. Please feel free to hit us up. And if you'd like, you can watch what we're watching next time and write in and let us know your thoughts. Peter, I believe it is your pick. What are we going to be watching for next episode?
Yeah, when I said it when I picked 400 Blows that I really do want to keep going with trying to pick some more French new wave for us. But we've been French heavy for a while, so I didn't want to go ahead and do a new one with this. But then I was looking through what collections are new on the Criterion Collection channel, and they've got a Kristen Stewart thing going on, which I watched. What was that movie called that I loved so much with the
Happiest Season? That's my favorite Kristen Stewart.
Oh
movie.
My god! Can I tell you? I fucking love Happiest Season.
I watch it at least twice every Christmas season.
Corey,
I love it.
It is such a good movie. written by Mary Holland, who I deeply love. Happiest Season is an incredible movie. But yes, Wizard, it was the bodybuilding movie called Love Lies Bleeding that I had Kristen Stewart on my mind. Because I fucking love Kristen Stewart. I'm going to stand by her. But I also saw that that also part of that is the Kristen Stewart Criterion Channel is the Kelly Reichardt movie Certain Women. Which is a 2016 movie. I actually know very little about it, except that it's a Kelly Reichardt movie. And I just wanted a chance to talk about Kelly Reichardt, who, as I've said, I think a few times, probably on air here, that she is one of my favorite working directors right now. And this is one of maybe the two movies I have not seen from her. I've seen everything else. I deeply love it. She does these tiny, tiny little stories so delicately. And I just am left so, I don't know, she washes me in what she washes me in. And I just deeply love her. And so I was excited to take a chance to talk about Kelly Reichardt, talk about my relationship with her, talk about a film of hers that I'd never seen. And so we will be watching the 2016 American drama film, Certain Women, starring Laura Dern, Kristen Stewart,
yes,
Michelle Williams, Lily Gladstone. It's just a murderer's row. Let me tell you. There's some women in this movie that are great actors. So that's what we'll be watching. Certain Women.
Right
come
on.
Watch it with us.
Certain
yeah,
Women.
Yeah, Kelly Reichardt's fucking awesome. I'm excited to watch and chat. Angela, have you seen any of her movies? You had said you hadn't. I'm interested to see what you think about this. Mm-hmm. This will be a bit of a change of pace from Come and See.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to watching that, Peter, next week, Certain Women. And again, you can reach out to us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com or on various social media sites. We are not finished with the episode yet, though, because we do like to finish with talking about the other things that we are consuming, be it video games or plays or books or movies or whatever, called What Else You Watching? So, Peter.
Yeah, I'll keep talking. I did actually read Save the Cat. I have a lot of thoughts about Save the Cat.
Okay,
oh,
I would love to talk about
it.
I've read it probably somewhere between 6 and 10 times.
No kidding.
Including its sequel.
Chris Hockabout thinks it's the worst screenwriting book ever written.
I would love to have a conversation with him about it.
Yes, he hates it.
I think it's probably the only screenwriting book I've ever
read. It's the only one you'll need. That's the tagline.
That's why do you like formulas?
I'm torn between Chris Hockabout's and Corey's opinion about it. It felt, I think there's some very useful stuff in there, and I like the way it made me feel about certain stories. It also felt like it was designed to build hotel room seminars around and create a get-rich-quick sort of formula for how to. But also, this dude was not he made a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, he's the blank check guy. Like,
it's such a very specific niche for this book. Like, read this book if you want to sell scripts that companies don't want to make, but just in case they ever want to make them. then
oh yeah, like, it's how to sell a so spec strange. Script. Like
yes, it's so strange. But that wasn't what I was going to talk about. I just thought, but I would love to talk more.
I mean, I've read lots of different writing and books about writing and what's the McGee guy and all that stuff and bunch of other things. And this one is at least short enough and distilled enough that whenever I am starting a new writing project, I will listen to both it and its sequel again, because I can listen to it on 1.5 speed or whatever. And every time there's like something that it makes me think of, it's like, oh, I should actually do that and that and that. And that's a part of the story I didn't consider, I hadn't had before. So even if it is like sort of doing, I agree with you, it's the Hotel Rich Quick seminar on how to do a screenwriting thing or whatever, it is that, but I still find it useful as a tool.
Hey, I'm right there with you. Like I was really glad that it made me think about the story I'm writing in certain ways and maybe consider things. But I think I was glad I entered it with a skeptical sort of mindset that got even more skeptical as I saw he wrote Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. And also as the writing of the book, I do not feel is particularly strong. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's like that and Blank Check, I think, were his two big
ones. Yeah, like, okay, dude.
Yeah.
But I feel bad mentioning this. I did also watch Driveway Dolls, Angela, which I know you loved. And
oh,
I really
you didn't
deeply
like it?
Disliked.
Oh my god. It was hilarious. Sorry. And silly and like sure. Tightly compact. It reminded me of all the things I liked about the 90s.
I couldn't believe that it was an hour and 15 minutes and felt like it had a bunch of filler in it.
I feel like in cinema right now, we have too much seriousness in cinema, and it was nice to have a fun romp that was...
Sure, yeah.
It was a silly fun romp. That's
I
all
saw...
it needed to be.
I saw an outline of a fun romp somewhere in there, but I did not personally experience that. But I will recommend one thing. I'll stop shitting on things, and I will say one thing that I watched this week that I absolutely, honestly was so excited about, and it is a horror movie. I'm so sorry. Should I, I'm probably going to launch a weird horror movie or horror thing newsletter in the next, month or so. So maybe I should, tease that up here. Yeah, I don't know. I have lots of thoughts. I watch all these fucking horror things.
I'll bet Frida would be interested.
Yeah, looking forward to reading that.
But the thing I watched is a brand new Nicolas Cage movie called Arcadian. And this movie, I don't know what to say. Like, so this movie is... There's the reductive way of talking about Arcadian, which is a terrible title, is that it's The Quiet Place, sort of. It's basically like The Quiet Place in all of its sort of construction, post-apocalyptic monsters sort of things, trying to live whatever, except it's just better. I don't think The Quiet Place is a bad movie, but I think Arcadian is a very good, small movie. But let me fucking tell you, the monsters, the creatures that are in this, I guess the word is refreshing, because I can't remember another time where I saw a monster or creature in a movie where I was like, I have not seen that before. I have not seen how this is depicted before. This is, I don't know, I was over the moon. I am still like bubbling with holy shit, what the fuck am I looking at? And it was just the creativity of its newness I found to be just amazing.
I appreciate that moment of ooh, that's new. I felt that way when I watched The Ritual.
I'm like, fuck, oh, I love The Ritual.
This is a creature
times.
I haven't seen before. This
exactly.
is cool.
Yes, exactly. Maybe that's the last time I saw it. I love The Ritual. I've watched The Ritual at least 7, 8, 10,
that's
9 times.
That's a good one. So good.
It's so good. And also very comforting. That's one of my comfort horror movies.
Comfort scare fests.
But Arcadian is just this is, I love this. Everything that's going on with this creatures. I don't know. Whatever. It's a small movie. I can see somebody watching it and not thinking the monsters are fucking cool and being like, that was just kind of a bunch of nothing. I get that, but I really connected with it, and I loved Arcadian, 2024 movie. And that's it for me.
Nice.
How about you, Wizard? What else have you been watching?
Oh man, I just want to say I'm loving like this late period Nicolas Cage. I guess all of his taxes are paid and he's like still taking weird roles, but like I'm just really enjoying like
agree.
His yeah, he's just becoming like a Vincent Price or like another yeah. like fixture of the horror scene that like we're just delightful. Just delightful.
I mean, I will and defend his guild all day.
I will not at all.
I love but that I, movie. Love it.
But like, he was also not a very Nicolas Cage in this movie. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you that like, it seems like he's doing what he wants. Like he was in Dream Scenario, which I didn't think was like a great movie, but it was like that was fun, and he seemed into it, and I was glad it existed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else am I watching? I'm not watching too much lately, I'm afraid. I do want to give a shout out to our own Peter Allen Clark for his recommendation of A Canticle for Leibowitz, which is a book that I finished reading last week. It is an incredible book. One of the best books I've ever read. Such
such a
moving, like fascinating, like interesting book. Just about like the cyclical nature of history and how we keep making the same mistakes over and over again. But there, if we hold true to certain principles, if we hold true to like certain principles, we make the same mistakes again, but we do a little bit better next time. It was such an excellent piece of like post-apocalypse fiction.
Yeah.
Sprawling story, really moving and just like really thoughtful. And it has by far one of the best like final like paragraphs, final lines in any book I've read. And so I don't want to spoil that for anybody. I really recommend that you make your way through A Canticle for Leibowitz because it really
I'm over the moon. Like,
Yeah.
It's like my favorite thing in the world to give an actual good recommendation. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of speechless about it because like you know I was watching Fallout because I was getting my apocalypse like dose and then you recommended A Canticle for Leibowitz and I kind of fell off of Fallout, not because it's not good, just because I fall off shows all the time. I still haven't finished Shogun. I'm terrible. But I could not put that book away. I really just it had so much more to say about the apocalypse and about humanity. And oh shit. So we watched Things to Come and I hated it.
Yeah.
And this is a movie that takes a lot of the things that are floating around in Things to Come.
That's what
and
made me
gives
bring it up.
It
yeah.
Something like gives it this other thing that is what I was talking about when we talked about Things to Come. It's the message of Canticle for Leibowitz is we have to change. Like, what if we want to survive, if we want to stop doing these like cyclical returns to like stagnation and barbarity, technology isn't going to help us. Politics isn't going to help us. The church even isn't going to help us. What matters is that we need to undergo internal change and we need to dedicate ourselves to principles that matter beyond just progress for progress sake, because it's not going to do anything for us. And I was overjoyed to read that book and experience that like old school science fiction vibe in a way that didn't make me hate it. Canticle for Leibowitz, it's stellar. It's the book of 2024.
Yes. Written in 1959. Yes. Yeah.
This is why I'm so cautious with recommendations, people. This is why I'm so cautious, is because when I get the one that matches, oh, I feel great.
Mm-hmm.
So good. So good. I really, really, really enjoyed it. Other than that, I'm not really watching anything at the moment. Strong recommend for folks who need video games to like bring down anxiety and all that jazz. Strongly recommend you pick up Manor Lords, which is a medieval city builder. There's a lot of chatter on the internet about Manor Lords. It's in early access. If you just kind of sit down and build a little village and watch your little villagers like go about their business, man, it's so satisfying. I love a good city builder and I strongly recommend that one. That's what I got right now.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you. Angela, how about you? What else have you been watching?
Oh,
I have not been watching a lot. I've been busy studying for my realtor stuff, and
yeah,
I need to make money so that I can stay in this house in case of emergency and such. Anywho, but my dear friend Andy hooks me up with weird films and makes me watch them because sometimes I won't sit through a whole thing. And so we kind of went and remediated an old problem by which I did not watch the whole of Southland Tales. And so I finally finished.
I need to get back to that at some point.
I got to get on that, man.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. Last time I stopped at the part where Sherry O'Terry becomes the bad guy. But I watched the whole thing and I didn't hate it. It was super funny.
Yeah, I don't hate it.
And it actually stands up. Like, I think it's more interesting now than it was when it was released. It's oddly prescient. It's actually kind of enjoyable, and the ocean is in control. Yeah.
You want to watch two cars fucking?
Oh my god, that too. And
wow,
then
I
so,
do.
So that was last week, and then we watched Andy's favorite movie, which is The Stupids, starring Tom Arnold.
Which
I consider to be like John Waters for children. And it was just so stupid and fun. And I actually had a good time.
I've never seen it.
Wait, you haven't
seen
it?
Stupids.
I've never seen The Stupids. I've seen the VHS cover of The Stupids.
Wait, none of you guys have seen The Stupids.
No.
Corey, I feel like you would like this movie.
Is there a boater? Are they wearing boaters? I can feel
there was always something about Tom Arnold that felt he was beneath even me. But...
I was surprised because I had
Mark,
that
he is wearing a boater. I was
Cronenberger in this movie, so
yeah, no, it's actually it's so stupid that you have to laugh, and it's ridiculous. I feel like you might actually
John
like
Landis
it.
Did that?
Yeah. No, I hope that you guys watch it and have come back to me next week and are like, oh yeah, that's pretty stupid. And then of course I have rejected heartily the Oakland A's and have adopted the Portland Timbers soccer team as my sports ball team of choice. And they played the worst game of soccer. And I actually went by myself to a sports bar to watch this game because I can't watch it on the streaming services that I already paid for. And they felt so badly for me because this was like maybe the second game I watched that the bar owner gave me a goalie kit jersey from last year because they're like, we want you to keep coming back. They don't usually play this badly. Which shout out to Home, a bar in Portland, right by Sassy's, by the way, so you can get your sports ball and your hot naked lady dancing all on one corner.
Ooh.
So yeah, that's
do a live show there.
I walked by it on my way to the car and two guys were going in and I hollered, tip them well, boys.
I think there's something to say about watching bad sports teams. I watched two football games this year, which is two more football games than I've ever watched in any previous year of my life. But the first one was like the summer I guess it was like 6 months ago. So it was like in the winter or whatever. And I don't remember who the teams were, but they were both equally terrible, and it was so much fun to watch. And then I watched like this like captivating nail biter of a Super Bowl where each team is absolutely phenomenal, and they were both equally enjoyable.
I just like watching. My love of sports ball comes from a very selfish place of trying to return the objectification of women back to men by watching hot men run around in shorts or other things and just appreciate the male form, because there are few venues for me to do so openly.
Hey, the Olympics are this year.
The Olympics
and
are coming,
the gymnastics
and
are gonna be there.
Yeah.
Baby.
And I also want to recommend one of the things I watch a lot of is competitive bouldering. You get a lot of good butt shots from people climbing up
those
walls.
Backs.
So.
Oh, I love those backs.
Oh, that's I hadn't thought of that. This is a good call, Corey. I'll get back to you on that in a future what we're watching.
Corey, what else are you
watching? Butts.
There's a bunch on YouTube.
There's butts all over the internet, Corey.
Yeah. I watch it on YouTube. They have a whole thing. Also on the Criterion Channel is their 1999 collection, which
I saw that.
Yeah.
I had to click on because being an elder millennial / exennial, like this is like right in my wheelhouse.
Some big movies on there.
Yeah. And so there are a lot of them I have seen, a lot of them I have not seen. Some great ones on here that I've recently seen, like Straight Story was super good. That would have been a crit. Mm-hmm. I don't know, there's like Following. You can see like Christopher Nolan when he was like up his ass in a different way, I guess. Because he's always been up his ass, but he's up his ass in a different way now. And more expensive suicides for starters. But the one that I ended up watching was one that I've been wanting to watch for a very long time. I saw it a couple of times back in the day. I think I saw it in the theater when our friends were working at the theater and were just like, let us watch movies for free and stuff.
Yep.
Was 1999, kids.
Doug Liman's Go.
I owned that on DVD for a long time.
Oh, okay.
I still probably do. Yeah, I've seen it many times.
I remember watching it a couple of times back in the day. And I remember watching it being like, this is better than it has any right to be. Doug Liman also going on to, what else does he do? I know he did Edge of Tomorrow. He's Swingers and then Edge of Tomorrow and then like a couple other, Born Identity. But this is at the time it was very much like seen as a like Pulp Fiction ripoff because it tells multiple stories like together or whatever. But like, that's so dismissive. Like, this is actually like a very like fun and competent movie. And I don't know, I just had a really good time watching Go again for some reason. And the cast, it's an amazing cast of people.
Sarah Pauly.
Sarah Pauly, Katie Holmes,
what's his name,
Jane Krakowski,
very handsome, peak handsome
Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, that's what I'm
what an attractive man he is. And even when he's playing just this scumbag of a character,
continues to be beautiful.
So I don't know, that's what I'm watching. One of the ones I wanted to ask about is, I remember back in the day when this came out and everyone was talking about Ghost Dog.
I've never seen that show. I've still never seen it.
Oh my god, is that gonna be a pick?
That could have been a pick. It could have been a contender.
Well, I haven't watched it.
No,
I was gonna ask you all, is it worth going back and watching?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's great. It's a great movie. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I might watch Ghost Dog.
Sorry.
Way of the Samurai.
Yeah.
Way of the Samurai.
I might watch Ghost Dog. I might go back and, because another one that I loved and I had on VHS back in the day and I watched numerous times is my favorite Spike Lee film, Summer of Sam.
This, I was going to ask if people had seen that because I really wanted to watch that.
John Leguizamo, right?
Loved it back in the day. It is this movie that is about the Son of Sam killer that has absolutely nothing to do with the Son of Sam. And
he's
it's
like
just,
Hitler in Come and See. He's just
exactly. I don't know. I loved it back in the day. I'm really curious to see if I like it, you know, two decades or so later. So, all right. I think that's going to about wrap us up for this week. I appreciate everyone sticking with us. Once again, you can email us at critclubpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Blue Sky and Instagram and Threads and all the things at Crit Club Podcast. Thanks, everyone, for joining. I'll see you next week when we're watching, what is it again, Peter?
We're watching Certain Women, Kelly Reichardt's Snipe 2016, Certain Women.
Very good. We'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.